Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Nate, big developments on Raw tonight regarding the Judgment Day. JD McDonagh no longer a pledge, no longer trying to earn his way in. Damian Priest says, I can't stand you a lot of the time, but you've earned it. Gives him a jacket. JD's thrilled. And then later in the show, well, at the end of the show, Rhea Ripley steps out and thanks Drew McIntyre for helping Priest and Balor retain the tag team titles. Drew, in ostensibly a lone figure seeking revenge for what Jay, when he was with the Bloodline, did to cost him his championship, but certainly hints are there of some conspiring between Rhea and Drew also. What did you think? Was this like what Judgment Day needed as a spark storyline-wise? Does it feel like some of this stuff is coming too late, or was this really well done and has you more intrigued, anything above or otherwise?
I'm kind of, to be honest, like middle of the road with it. Like, I feel like a lot of this stuff was kind of foreshadowed. I mean, we kind of knew JD McDonagh was going to probably be part of the Judgment Day at some point, unless they were kind of like using him and they were it was eventually going to wind up in some sort of a feud against JD McDonagh or something like that, which it still, I guess, could. So between that and then, I want to say it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, we saw Rhea Ripley in the background of a shot, like of an interview backstage. She was in the background talking to Drew McIntyre. So it was a couple things that, like, you know, I think we saw coming. So it wasn't like it necessarily blew me away or wasn't anything that, like, I didn't see coming or was surprised or anything, but I like the direction it's going. I mean, for Drew McIntyre, I personally like him so much better as a heel. Everything he did on, in the indies, Drew Galloway, and when he came back to NXT as Drew McIntyre, he's just a much better heel, in my opinion, than a face. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what this kind of means for Drew McIntyre, what kind of edge it's going to give for him. And then with JD McDonagh, I'm a big fan of his work. Everything he did down at NXT and up here and finally now on the main roster. So it's kind of cool to see him finally get this moment here to become a full-fledged member of the Judgment Day. I'm still not 100% sold on the fact that he's a quote full-fledged member of the Judgment Day. I still feel like, especially with everything, Damian Priest was kind of saying to JD McDonagh when he's handing him that vest. I think there's still something there before, we know for sure if he's actually in the Judgment Day or if he's just a pawn.
Yeah. I'm curious how it plays out because Priest, obviously JD's been there. He's been there to help Priest, and it hasn't backfired. And obviously that was the case that, Dom and Balor and Rhea were kind of saying, hey, Damian, he's earned it. Why are you holding this grudge? Why don't you like him? But Priest still doesn't like him. So the idea that he's suddenly just going to be embraced and welcomed by Priest feels like that's not the story they're telling, to put it out there that way. So something's going to happen where JD costs them a match and then Priest blows up and then the others come to his defense, something along those lines. But I also, one thing I'm intrigued by with JD McDonagh is that, yes, he was happy, and he acted kind of subservient, like, oh, thank you, Damian, this is an honor. But there's always been something about him that felt like that there was something else going on with him in terms of his intentions. And, that he comes across as somebody who would be playing mind games and maybe trying to become a leader of the group or an influencer of the leader, Priest or otherwise. And so, I've been impressed with, JD we knew was a good wrestler, but impressed in terms of the nuance of playing his character. So I welcome this step. I mean, I think it had to come around this time. And so now, we'll see what happens next on the Drew side of things. I don't see him joining Judgment Day. I wouldn't bet on it. I think that it just doesn't seem like it would fit. But and it might actually just be a mistake, but I'm with you that right now I like him better as a heel than a face. I think he can be really good at both, and he has been really good at both. But the problem is, I've said it a lot, Cody came in and just took Drew's spot, you know, as mm-hmm. the affable, fan-friendly, pro-WWE babyface. You know, you don't need more than one of them, and Cody is fresher and doing a good job with it. So this is a good version of it. I'm glad that Drew didn't just come in and snarl and go, I'm a heel now. Like, you understand his motivations, even if you start to get upset with the fact that he just can't let it go. Or as Cole said, so much for letting bygones be bygones. But I don't think fans are going to necessarily boo Drew, at least in unison, when he eventually turns heel, because people are going to see that, you know, he's got a point, even if it seems like, you know, maybe it is time to move on.
Yeah, and I think those are the greatest heels. When, you know, you can actually see the kind of the nuance of why they're, you know, why they're upset and what their issue is. So I'm really looking forward to that as well.
Yep. There was also one other Judgment Day development tonight, and that was the comment by Damian when he was being braided and going, I'm the leader. He was goaded into saying it, which got dirty looks from Balor and Priest and Dom. And then he kind of said, well, you guys know what I meant. And he kind of tried to blow it off. What did you make of that when he said it? Is that a slip up that Priest does see himself as the leader and he showed that, and now he's going to have to do damage control? And if so, to what end?
I kind of did see it in that light. Now, granted, I don't know if it was just kind of, you know, some foreshadowing for later in the night when they, you know, kind of named him the leader of the War Games faction, the War Games group. But I've kind of noticed shades of this, you know, for a while now. We're kind of Damian Priest almost seems like he should be the leader, or you know, and I think this is the first time he's actually come out and said the words, I am the leader, or you know, if I'm not mistaken. But there's certainly been kind of, you know, shades of that where he's felt like, or where at least it seems like he's felt like he should be the leader. So I'm curious to see how this winds up playing out post War Games, because I'm especially where he went up to JD McDonough, and you know, I don't like you, but I respect you, or I forget exactly how he said it, but we'll let you join the Judgment Day anyway. It's kind of like it was, he even said, I think, like, I've decided to let you join the Judgment Day. So I'm kind of thinking they're going to, you know, or Damian Priest is going to continue along those lines and continue kind of making just little remarks here and there that, like, I've made this decision until it probably rubs people the wrong way, you know, the rest of their faction the wrong way. Probably Rhea, if I had to guess, you know, and it might kind of, you know, eventually lead to a little bit of dissension or an implosion in the Judgment Day or something along those lines. But that's kind of the way that I took it tonight.
All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce ourselves, and then we'll explore more of the Judgment Day developments and other War Games hype and other happenings on the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Monday, November 13th, 2023. We are live streaming just a few minutes after this week's episode of Monday Night Raw aired. It was in Washington, D.C. Big crowd. They did a great job in terms of camera angles showing the audience, including that last row filled. You could see outlines of human heads in that last row. And so it had a good atmosphere in that way. And we are here to talk about everything that those fans saw and the TV audience saw on tonight's show. So I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pewtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including this, the Wade Keller Post Show, live every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday nights. Unless there's a preemption like the Saturday for Collision. You can always live stream our show at WadeKellerPostShow.com or go to PWTorch.com, go to my TV report, and at the top and bottom there is a link for the live stream. That also includes the phone number and email if you need a reference on how to call in or email the show. The other voice you hear is Nate Lindberg. He is a participant in the PWT Talks NXT podcast, and also writes hits and misses columns for PWTorch.com. Nate, welcome back to the Raw Post Show co-host chair.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to always glad to be able to sit down and talk some wrestling with you, man.
Yeah. Well, good to talk to you too. If other people want to join us, the number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on our switchboard so that we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so let's continue where we left off with the War Games hype and kind of step back in terms of what they did to get people excited about the match. They aired a video with a history on it. Cole talked about Cody's dad inventing it, creating it. They went over the rules. We also had Adam Pearce fuming mad. They replayed his announcement last week. He got in a similar state of mind this week. And then they announced next week there will be an advantage match to determine who gets which team gets the 2-on-1 and 3-on-2 and 4-on-3 advantage as the War Games progresses. We also, by the way, had no hints. We talked about this last week, the possibility they would add a fifth member to each team. There was no hints of that tonight. But I am curious, and I know I'm kind of throwing a lot out there, and you can take it where you want, Nate, but I'm curious if Drew interfering against Cody and Jay and shaking hands with Ripley is maybe going to lead to Jay demanding Drew join them and enter the match and pay a price. And if so, one, do you think that might happen? Do you think it should happen? And let's play it out. If it did happen, who would make sense as a fifth person to offset Drew joining Judgment Day in that war game? So you can grab on any of those.
Sure. So I've loved War Games. So I'm really looking forward to the match in general. It's kind of becoming maybe my like second favorite big match behind the Royal Rumble. And it's going to be awesome to see Cody Rhodes in it. Again, just family history, his father creating it. So just that right there in and of itself is reason enough for me to watch, just kind of to see that moment in history there. But in terms of like adding a fifth person, so like I'm actually looking through a list right now of like every War Games match. And I mean, it seems like, I don't remember them ever doing five people. I'm sure they probably may have at one point between WCW and WWE. But I mean, it could certainly work adding a fifth person. Drew would obviously make the most sense to join Judgment Day. I'm trying to think of who could be a good fifth member for Cody's team. I'm sure there's somebody that's like glaring right at me too, and I can't quite think of it. But it'll come to me. I'm sure it'll come to me. We'll get like halfway through the show and I'll blurt it out. But no, like I said, I'm certainly looking forward to this. I think, as far as the advantage match next week goes, I would be very surprised to see the face team, get that advantage because, with the heels getting the advantage, come actual War Games, you're able to build a little more suspense and some more sympathy on the faces if, the heels do have that advantage. So that's kind of where I'm expecting that to go, next week. I think there was something else you threw my way too, and I'm not remembering it.
Yeah, I threw a lot at you because I was just talking about the hype for War Games and the job that they did, talking about the history. It'd be nice if the baby faces won the advantage match just to be different, but we know the odds are not good of that happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, anything else? Any other thoughts on the job that they did broadly tonight, hyping it?
Yeah, no, the past couple of weeks, I mean, I think they've done a good job. I think if you're a wrestling fan and you've followed wrestling for quite some time, I'm sure in the last few weeks leading up to, Adam Pearce's announcement last week, you kind of probably saw some shades of that. We kind of see, the four faces kind of start to involve themselves with the Judgment Day a little bit more, and all of their stories kind of converged into one. But I think they've done a good job with it. For a match that comes around because it's that time of year, I'm okay with it. It's not like, at least in this case, there's an actual storyline reason that they're having war games. And it's not like, you know, with a lot of times with the Hell in a Cell pay-per-views, they'd have to like just, oh, hey, it's time for Hell in a Cell. Let's figure out who's going to be in Hell in a Cell. So I'm glad they're kind of going that direction, and it's not, you know, it's not just kind of throwing something together. I'm looking forward to this. I think this is going to be, this should be a good War Games match.
It definitely should be a good War Games match.
Yeah.
I think Cody will in particular be motivated and inspired.
Yeah, I think he's going to try and have his big, big moment in that match, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I just hope it nobody gets in who wasn't in it when the door locked. Because I like to keep the integrity of the match. It's there to trap everybody inside until there's a finish. Other than, of course, people entering as the match goes on. But once the match from beyond begins, to use Dusty's old term.
And if I'm not mistaken, too, because I was not much of a, you know, WCW, you know, NWA guy growing up, but they used to have a roof on the cage of War Games, right?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I like the fact in a way they don't, because you can kind of, you know, Io Shirai would have never, or Io Sky would never be able to do her moonsault off the top of the cage or things like that. But
yeah.
But in terms of keeping everybody in confinement and where they belong, keeping other people out, yeah, I wish they'd put the roof back on.
Yeah, or just not book people to run out and
or that
jump
in, or that
yeah. or snap the chain. Clip the chain. All right, let's go to Brad from Florida. You're up first. What's in your mind about Raw tonight, Brad? Good to talk to you.
Hey, Nate. Hey, Wade. You know, I just queued this up for you, Nate, because I know that you didn't know who might be the fifth member of the Cody team.
Yeah.
Ooh, yes. Oh. Yeah,
we mentioned him last week.
How's that?
Brad. Yeah, we mentioned him last week. Thought which side he could be on. Like, I was thinking last week, Drew could be on the babyface side, Randy on the heel side. They could do a double turn mid-match, something along
you
those lines.
You did say that.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah. So Randy is the most intriguing option among those that seem, you know, plausible or likely seems like an overstatement. But, you know, on the short list of people – Randy's kind of at the top. And, you know, you can think, oh, what about Kevin Owens? He's friends with Sammy, but he's doing his own thing on SmackDown. They'd have to bring him back over. You know, it's hard. Nobody jumps out. It's just obvious and ready other than the intrigue. I think people would feel if they saw if Randy's music hit next Monday. And I think that would increase viewership and interest in Survivor Series, too.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot see a way that – yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Nate.
Oh no! I there was like dead air, so I was just going to try and fill it. That kind of makes the most sense to him. I'm kind of scrolling since that question came up. I've kind of been scrolling up and down the Raw roster, and that kind of makes the most sense, you know. And I have also seen reports that, you know, he should be ready to be making a comeback relatively soon. So
yeah.
I'd be for it.
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also incredibly exciting. I mean, honestly, it was so predictable when Pierce threw everyone out of the arena. I said, you know, I was watching with my kids, and I said, well, Rhea's going to go to the back and recruit Drew, and Drew's going to end up ruining the match for Cody and Jay. And they did, in all fairness, set it up, though, very well, because you remember weeks ago, I mean, I would say maybe a month ago, when Jay came over to Raw, Drew said, you know, that Cody Rhodes, who does he think he is, bringing over this Jay Uso who screwed me and blah, blah, blah. But then tonight they did throw a curveball at me when they did the Seth-Drew meeting in the back, and Drew shook his hand and said, this might have been, you're right, it might be the best thing that ever happened to me. I did not connect that in my mind with him joining Judgment Day. I connected that in my mind with, all right, he's going to, you know, fight back from the bottom or whatever, you know, something kind of like that. But it was very well done and long-term planned out. I was very impressed by, you know, how they did this weeks and weeks and weeks ago to get to this point, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Nate, anything you want to add?
Yeah, we're not used to, like, really crazy long-term planning in WWE, are we? No, I think they've done a great job getting us here. And you know, to your point, Brett, I kind of took the same thing away when you know, Drew said this, said that's a Seth backstage and he's going to fight from underneath. And I forget exactly the words he said, but, you know, I kind of just assumed he was going to go back to square one and, you know, fight from underneath and, you know, try to scrap his way back to the top to get another championship shot. Yeah, it didn't really cross my mind that he might do something like this. But then, of course, once he did, I start thinking to myself, oh yeah, I remember him talking to Rhea backstage, like in a segment, you know, a few weeks ago. So yeah, you know, we'll see where this goes for Drew, but, I'm hoping it's to a pretty like dastardly heel run. I'd love to see that out of him.
I'll be right back to you.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I was thinking just out of all this is, you know, obviously with Drew stating to Seth tonight that he's going to, you know, get his shot and work his way back to a shot at that Seth's title. I mean, it does create a little conundrum if he is in Judgment Day, which I guess he is. Because, you know, the briefcase is on Damian Priest. And what happens there? Is this become Damian gets kicked out of the group based on his leader comment tonight, maybe setting some things in motion the wrong way? Not sure. I mean, what do you guys think about all of that? Because just the dynamic of Damian holding the briefcase, Drew now wanting the championship, And you know, this new member, obviously JD McDonough now being in the group, and what Priest said tonight, does it create a case for Damian to get kicked out of the group soon, or where do you think this is all going?
Don't know, and I don't have a top theory on what I think is going to happen, because any theories I have, I don't love. you know, like Priest just being kicked out of the group after declaring he's the leader and kind of being, you know, acting in a way that didn't seem to be like setting any kind of like moral, you know, realizing a moral compass. I don't know that Drew fits in with Judgment Day. I think an extended period of JD McDonough being manipulative and sneaky, perhaps ultimately at the expense of Priest in a longer story arc, is better than something suddenly happening. Nate, how about you?
I'm kind of like in the same boat. Like I can't really think of a good scenario that kind of speaks to me. Like Damian Priest is getting kicked out of the group for saying, you know, he's the leader, or maybe even if, you know, there's something else they can pin him on, you know, or whatever. Just him getting kicked out of the group seems anticlimactic, I guess, for lack of a better word right now. It just doesn't seem like it's yeah, I guess anticlimactic is the best word I can come up with. Drew McIntyre, you know, in terms of a large imposing figure would certainly be a good, I guess, replacement. But, you know, as Wade just said, like, I don't really think it fits the character as they've presented it so far. I think he would have to have, you know, with this heel turn, would have to be a kind of a dramatic character shift for him to align with Judgment Day and kind of throw those, you know, those morals that, you know, he's had, you know, kind of out the window, which certainly could happen. But I also think that Drew is a bigger star on his own. Like, I don't think he needs a faction behind him like that. I'm like my gut instinct, first thing thinking about that is, you know, I almost feel like the group would outshadow him, but like it would just be, or sorry, overshadow him. But he'd kind of almost just feel like almost, you know, lost in the group, I guess. Yeah, I feel like Drew McIntyre being affiliated with the group, you know, and kind of, you know, that them being, you know, some friends or kind of like the APA back in the day, you know, he can call on them when he needs them or something like that, you know, would be kind of cool. But I don't know if I'm sold on Drew actually like full-fledged joining Judgment Day, kind of like, you know, like JD did. I'm not, you know, like, wait, I'm not 100% sure where this is necessarily going to go with Damian Priest. You clearly, I think this is showing some foreshadowing for some, you know, dissension in the ranks here. But how they play that out is, I'm really curious to see how they wind up doing that, because like I said, I just think flat out kicking them out of the group just seems anticlimactic. I feel like there needs to be some sort of an explosive reason for him to either get kicked out of the group or leave the group, or something along those lines.
Brad, do you want to give your theory or any reaction to what Nate said or what I said earlier?
Yeah, I kind of do. Yeah. Thanks, Wade. I kind of do, because here's my thing. Like, out of all of the Judgment Day people, to be honest with you, like, Damian Priest has been the most moral, the most of a stand-up guy, if you can consider any of them, you know, as a character. He's been the one who said, you know, in the past, I don't want interference. I don't want anyone, you know, marring this match for us. He really hasn't done anything that dastardly. Like, he really he's been a jerk and he's been, you know, vicious at times, but he hasn't been flat out evil, in my opinion, in the way that Rhea has or Dom has or whatever. So I think, like, swapping a Drew for a Damian Priest, and I just think if Drew were to win the championship with the help of Judgment Day, and Damian would be kind of like sitting around being like, well, what about me, guys? You know what I mean? Like, I still got this briefcase and whatever. And they're like, oh yeah, whatever, blah, blah, blah. You can't use that now. And then maybe Drew turning on him and eventually Priest cashing in on Drew. I think that would be an enormous moment for Damian Priest. Like, if Drew were the one to kick him out of the group and with Rhea's backing and doing something dastardly on him, I just think it would really work. Because to me, again, you're not replacing the most evil member of Judgment Day in Priest, just based on the way he's acted. I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but that's just my take on it.
There have been times where I felt they were prepping fans to see Priest as a babyface, and then they didn't turn him, and he kind of went more back to being more heelish and had taken a step more kind of back to the dark side and not seeming like he sort of had that moral compass. But and that's where, you know, maybe when we talk about and tout the long-term planning, maybe they haven't always stuck to their long-term plan. Maybe there are times when they've working and slow down and hit the brakes a little bit. Nate, you affirmed that.
I think my internet's crapping out a little bit on me. You're breaking up a little bit. If you don't mind repeating what you just said.
Just that Priest showed hints of going heel.
Okay.
And then they, I'm sorry, of being more babyface. And then, I'm trying to think. Oh, in the point at the end was that. Now I'm trying to remember the hook at the end because of when you didn't hear the internet part.
It was like the last sentence you said
now
just kind of like broke up.
Now I know. that it shows that maybe they had long term planning, but then they rescinded it in order to extend the storyline.
Ah, yeah. I mean that certainly could be because like I said, I've certainly noticed that too. You know, in it seemed like Damian Priest was they've been setting him up, you know, here and there for kind of a babyface turn. I don't know if it was kind of like, I don't really know if it was they would set him up for babyface turn and then kind of like pull it back, or if it was kind of, you know, maybe for an eventual. You know, for kind of long-term storytelling, you know, for an eventual, you know, departure from the Judgment Day. So I'm not sure. I would kind of lean a little bit more, you know, kind of just knowing a little bit of, you know, how WWE works and things change all the time. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they were, you know, going to kind of give him a bit of a push as like a baby face, you know, and then kind of rescind it. And you know, maybe it's not the right time to break up Judgment Day or, you know, something along those lines, or there was an injury somewhere and they had to reshuffle things around. You know, that wouldn't surprise me either. But Damian, I think, I don't remember if it was on this show or if it was on another show that I might've been talking about with Kelly at one point. But I know, you know, we've talked about Damian Priest being a babyface, you know, kind of breaking away from Judgment Day and, you know, kind of being that definitive babyface, you know, from that group. I think if anybody could pull it off, you know, it could certainly be him. Finn Balor obviously could, but, you know, out of the three guys in the group anyway, you know, Damian Priest, I feel like, is the one that's poised for kind of that next big push. You know, I think, you know, I think with kind of a babyface run, you know, he could certainly rock it. So yeah, that would make sense to me.
Yeah, I wasn't sold on that as a thing before. And I think in recent months he's stepped up. You know, he's had a good year. Brad, yeah. Back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah. There, another topic, you know, I've been trying to figure out for a month or so why I feel like Becky Lynch is not, like, connecting with me. And honestly, not – I don't see it from the audience either. I don't see the incredible – excitement for her that I saw even, you know, 10 months ago or 9 months ago or whatever it was. What I think it is, and I, it kind of just clicked for me tonight. I don't know why. And I don't know if you guys will agree with me or disagree with me, but she never talks like a normal person ever. Like, even I saw Ivar tonight talking like a normal person in the backstage thing with Bronson Reed and The Miz. Like, she, everything is the man has come around to this and the man wants to do this. And you feel like you're not getting anything authentic out of her. At least I do. Like, I feel like every time she talks, it's like a lot of platitudes and a lot of like stories and just things that like a real person would never say in real life. And you could say like, I don't know if there are any other characters who really never give you a glimpse of the real person at all. Like, even Seth Rollins, like, yeah, he has his kooky moments, but then he'll talk normal. Cody talks normal. The Miz even talks normal. You know, I don't know if there's anyone who talks in their promos quite like her. And I don't know if you guys noticed this or if I'm crazy, but I feel like it's affecting the fans the way they're connecting with her right now. And maybe I'm just totally seeing something that no one else sees and then I'm crazy, but I'm just curious your take on that.
Yeah, the Ivar talking like a normal person was weird.
I loved it.
It was like, you know, my first response is like, you know, this isn't a run through. Like, you're actually live on television. Like, do it. Sharing, you know, how you really speak with us. It was just, yeah, it was, surprising. Becky definitely has a cadence and a rhythm to what she says. She has a distinctive accent. But yeah, I mean, I think there's something to that it always does feel kind of like Ivar, where you'd feel weird if you heard her talk in a very normal voice, especially in the context of a TV show. Nate, what do you think?
Yeah. You know, I can't say that I've necessarily picked up on that, but I wasn't necessarily looking for it either. So I think the next time she talks, I'm probably going to be looking for it, but it would make sense. I mean, there have been so many times where I've been listening to a promo, you know, over the course of my life as a wrestling fan, and I'm like, who actually talks like this, you know? Mm-hmm. So that does take me out of, you know, investment in a character. So if that is the way Becky's coming across to some people right now, I could certainly see that kind of, you know, being partially a reason. But you know, it's funny that Brad brings this up, because I did notice that, you know, her music hit tonight and I'm used to hearing the entire crowd just like go crazy. And that reaction really wasn't there. I mean, there was certainly a reaction for her, but it wasn't like the reaction like Cody got or even Jey Uso got, you know, or Sammy got earlier in the night. I thought he got a great reaction. You know, it did seem a little bit muted. So I don't know if it's, you know, something just to do with the way that they've been presenting her character, or if maybe, you know, I was going to say she was absent, but she really wasn't absent during her NXT title run. So there's that. So I don't really know what it is, but I think next time she talks, I'm definitely going to be kind of paying a little bit more attention to her cadence and what she's saying. So I'm curious to see, you know, curious if that might be part of it, but I definitely did notice tonight that she didn't get the, the reaction that I was expecting her to get.
Yeah.
Brad, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, no, I'll let you guys go. But honestly, I don't know one person in WWE who talks like that. Like, everyone else at least gives you a little glimpse, like real talking, like real speaking, even if they're wild and kooky, or even if they're crazy, or even if it's Roman, or no matter who it is, Sammy, I mean, Kevin Owens, you name it. She's the only one that always has this facade of like, oh, I'm ready for this, and I'm ready for that. But it just never stops for a second. And I think that's the big difference between her a year ago and her now. But I'll let you guys keep going, and thanks for the call, and I can't wait to hear the rest of your show.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, sir.
Contributing. Nate, I want to this is kind of a little bit of an offbeat email, but I want to go to Chris in New Jersey, which I was just about to bring up because I didn't know this. He goes, what are your thoughts on WWE showcasing the card of Monday Night Raw on Twitter X before it airs live? One would assume that when Vince was in charge, they rarely foreshadowed what could happen on the following Raw due to possible last-minute changes. AEW infamously burn rushes us with Excalibur running down the next two cards, along with the upcoming entire pay-per-view lineup. Since Paul Levesque has been in control, they seem to week by week give more and more away on what's happening on Raw before it starts. With that being said, knowing the full lineup tonight before the show started made me feel like maybe I could skip tonight's Raw because I knew all the matches happening and the logical finishes of the matches. Is this a like-minded thought amongst WWE fans, and what are your thoughts on this? Should they withhold the match cards, or is it beneficial to let the audience know what is happening before the show starts? It's an intriguing question, and like this is one of those shows where if you know the lineup ahead of time, and they go, yeah, Seth and Sammy against JD and Dominic. I don't know if they gave that away before the angle to set it up. I would think not. That'd be weird. But Shinsuke and Otis, they announced well ahead of time. Piper and Tegan would have been a late advertisement, I think. Ciampa Kaiser, they advertised. Zaylee Indy Hartwell, I believe they advertised. Ivar Miz, they advertised. And the main event tag, they advertised. So, yeah, I don't know. Because I wanted, you know, after I sent the email in, I'm like, well, what did they announce that wasn't known, you know, earlier today or last week? And is there any downside to that? And I actually have thought this about AEW. I think there is a downside to announcing, for instance, everything planned for Rampage or most of the things planned for Collision, because you're basically letting people know not only who's going to be there, but who's not. And I think there is some value in tuning in and finding out once you're tuned in what the card is going to be. Obviously, you know, you don't want to do that for pay-per-view. And obviously there are times when you tune into a TV show and they do an angle like they did tonight to set up the opener where you wouldn't want to announce it all ahead of time. But there are some pros and cons to it. And the other negative, as Chris mentioned in the email, is if you throw too much information at people, it's not even what you say. It's that so much is said that they just lose track of, you know, what is most important. So I don't know. I mean, I guess a confident booker would say, here's what we got for you. Tune in. Maybe it's insecure to not, but you are eliminating that sense of watching and wondering what's going to happen next, which I think can be part of the fun of watching a wrestling TV show. And I think tonight's Raw is a good example of it.
No, personally for me, I am a big fan of being surprised in wrestling. Like I don't necessarily want to know everything that's going on in a card. Yeah, a pay-per-view is different, obviously, but even then, you know, like I'll go to the Royal Rumble, for example, right? You know, I don't want to know who the special entrants are going to be in the Royal Rumble. I want to all of a sudden hear Edge's music for the first time in, you know, 9 years and jump out of my chair because, you know, he just came out of retirement or, you know, things like that. I don't want to necessarily know who's going to be in there beforehand. So I'm kind of like where I think I lie on it is like I think it makes sense to certainly promote a match or two for Raw, you know, something to bring people in, reel people in. But I feel like putting the entire card out there, with the exception of the matches that are made, you know, during the show, you know, like the JD McDonough tag match there. But I think, like I said, I don't think it, to me anyway, it makes sense to just advertise a few matches on the show and then kind of let the card play out, you know, and allow people to be a little surprised. because like I said, that for me, that's the fun in wrestling is, you know, is the, are those surprises. You see something you don't, or see somebody you don't expect to see. You get excited, you know, as a fan. So, that's kind of where I am with it.
I want to take a moment and ask you, because you've covered NXT so closely, and now
sure.
Paul Levesque back in charge of creative. We're seeing some of his some of the wrestlers who are around during the TakeOver era get TV time on Raw that may not have come to them if Vince McMahon were still in control. And so looking at tonight's show, and you know, the women wrestlers jump out in terms of women getting their chance who were part of NXT. Tegan Knox had a video package talking about her knee injury and saying she doesn't want to be defined by that. We had Azaia Lee returning, and they're talking, you know, storyline-wise about her being gone for a while, and now she's back. She felt that she was held down for years, and now she wants to prove herself. Indi Hartwell, we're starting to see how she's being used, and certainly in NXT, there was a lot more character development with her than what they're giving her in Candice right now. I just kind of want your thoughts, and we'll start with the women from NXT, how you think Paul Levesque is, if he's putting them in a spot that feels about right, given what they showed they could do in NXT.
So I would say, yeah, you know, like, for example, like Zoe Stark, she's one that comes to mind right away that I think is right exactly where we expected her to be once she hit the main roster. She's kind of toiling right around, you know, the main card, main title card area right now. It's been a very, very long couple days for me, so I'm kind of like running on fumes, so I apologize. Like I said, so Zoe Stark, I feel like is exactly where she should be. Azaia Lee, I'm glad to see they're doing something, you know, with her here. I'm just hoping she's going to be able to hold up the push. You know, there's been a few times like down in NXT where they'd kind of, you know, they'd give her a push, and she the wrestling skills just didn't necessarily seem to be there for her to kind of continue that push along. But you know, here tonight, I like the fact that they're kind of giving her this angle where, you know, she's got these deadly kicks and she's knocking people out. She knocked Becky out last week. She knocked Indi out this week. I just wish they'd get a better camera angle, because the camera angle they got tonight definitely showed quite a bit of air between the foot and the face, but that's whatever. Indi, you know, like you said, they did a heck of a lot more character development with Indi. And I feel like with her, and I love Indi Hartwell. I'm a big fan of hers one way or another. But I feel like it's her character development that really got her over with me. You know, everything that she did with Candice, Johnny Gargano, Dexter Lumis, and Austin Theory in the way, it was almost 2 years ago, I think, at this point. That was great. She was the weakest link in the way, but she was still great. So I think for now, you know, where she is kind of like, ceiling. I think she's kind of where she should be. She did wind up winning NXT Gold, but it was a lackluster run. She was injured and had to kind of, you know, relinquish the title without ever losing it. But even when she won it, it almost felt like it came out of left field. Like there was certainly a story there that they were telling, but I know I didn't think she was going to necessarily win that ladder match and become the champion. So I think she's probably where she should be, you know, at the moment. The others, and you know, I know switching over to the men's division here, there's two men in particular that it really bothers me. It really, really bothers me that they are just getting zero reaction right now, and that's DIY. The feud that Gargano and Ciampa had in NXT was absolutely phenomenal. And even their tag run, I mean, I'll be honest, I have a DIY tattoo. I actually have a DIY tattoo. I love DIY. So really happy to see them back together, but it's the presentation of right now, just, it feels like a watered down version of what they were doing in NXT. even down to the matching gear, you know, it just, and they did wear matching gear in NXT, but it's like a little over the top right now. I don't know what they can do to really the audience behind them a bit more, but I would love to see if they're able to build DIY up a bit more and get the audience behind them. I'd love to see them almost do like a recreation of the feud that they had down at NXT. I think if Ciampa was able to be the Blackheart again that he was in NXT, I mean, they would easily have like a top heel on their hands. I just don't know if they, you know, with his age and how accident prone or not injury prone rather he's been, you know, over the last handful of years, if they're just kind of not, they don't want to put all the eggs in that basket for him to get injured again. So maybe that's why they're kind of going where they are with him right now. But I feel like between him and Gargano, there's just so much more they could do with the two of them. I'm sure there's more that come to mind or that I could talk about. Those are at least the ones that come to mind offhand.
Yeah, with DIY, does it feel like it's too late for them to grow into a more like a tag team title contender team easily? I mean, have they already been defined down? I mean, Gargano had a real shaky start. Ciampa was like, you know, this weird, odd lackey for Miz, and that didn't go a lot of places. And then now they're together again, but we're not really seeing. Like, if you're just a raw viewer who didn't watch NXT over the years, I mean, you wouldn't understand their bond. You wouldn't really.
Oh no.
I mean, you wouldn't have a sense of their different personalities. And Gargano, since he did the character in The Way, just sort of has lost his way as a likable underdog, scrappy babyface character that he was before that. And a lot of that sort of has hung on and I think hurt him on the main roster without any context. So it's just like, I mean, I'm watching, and when they first got together, I'm like, oh, Paul Levesque, he's going to get the most out of them. And it does feel like they're just there to be a mid-card utility team right now. And, you know, the Creeds are getting a lot more attention.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I you know, and heck, I mean, if that's what they're there to do right now, then, you know, I guess that's their job and it's fine. Somebody's got to do it. But I feel like there's so much more potential there. You know, and I know WWE, and now that, you know, with Triple H in charge, I mean, they're a little bit more off to do this, but you know, there was certainly a time where they just did not reference NXT history. So I feel like if they really wanted to kind of push DIY and get people behind them, just give us some really good video packages of their history. And then give us like some sort of a compelling story to lead them to the titles or something like that, even if they don't win the titles, but do something to get the fans behind them more, because they're both of them are absolutely phenomenal talents. And I feel like where they are right now, they're just being really underutilized. They should be getting, you know, I wouldn't say should be getting the strongest reaction of the night. But the fact that their music hit, which, and also their music sucks. They need to go back to their old DIY music if they can, but that might be part of it too. But yeah, you know, I just think they're being vastly underutilized in the role they're in right now.
All right, let's go next to AJ in Virginia. If you'd like to get on the show tonight, there's still some time. 347-215-8558. Push 1 when you call. AJ, thank you for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Hey, Wade, how are you?
Good, good.
So Wade, I was actually at the show in D.C. I'm just driving back home now, so I missed the top of your show, so I'm not sure what's been discussed, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have. I don't know if you had an on-site correspondent or not for the show today.
No, we didn't have one set up ahead of time, but when I saw you were calling for Virginia, I was like, I know Virginia's close to D.C., so maybe you were at the show, and then as soon as I heard the car noise in the background, I knew that that was likely. Well, first, thanks for calling. Looked like a great crowd tonight, size-wise. How enthusiastic were they, and how full was the building compared to other memories in that arena for you?
You know, it was a great show, a lot of energy. The crowd really, really got into the entire show from top to bottom. And it appeared to be an almost sold-out show. The only sections that were empty were the suites that they have over on one side, opposite side of the entrance rampway. The suites were empty, but everything else looked pretty full. So great show, a lot of energy. The one thing that stood out to me is Cody Rhodes is the star of the show. There's probably not even a close second. Seth, you know, is obviously very likable. People love singing his song. I'm sure Seth loved the moment when the four of them were in the ring together. Seth, Cody, Jay,
Sammy.
And the fact that they were singing Seth's song, you could just see his smirk, how much he was enjoying it. And I think it's telling in terms of folks being into the song, but in terms of how people respond to Cody, it's really something else. I mean, Cody had two of the largest pyros in the same show, which you don't see often, right? So I think most of the pyro budget is going towards Cody's entrance, which was pretty cool. The way Cody just carries himself, and I don't know if you remember, Wade, I've always felt Cody to be very corny and a little bit cheesy at times, but this guy has won me over with the way he carries himself, the way he interacts with his peers. And the most impressive thing, and I went with a few of my buddies, and we all noticed the same thing, when in the main event, when he was, on the sidelines waiting to get tagged in by Jay, the way he's able to uplift all of the fans by just having them, you know, start clapping with his rhythm, with doing certain gestures to get Jay going. You don't see a lot of people control the audience as well as Cody. And he's just has the best rhythm I've ever seen anyone have in terms of being in tune and connected to the crowd at every moment. So I thought that was very impressive. So I thought that deserved a call out.
He is old school when it comes to milking the hot tag and getting the crowd involved. It's not a completely lost art because, you know, you see it done, but he's got that mastered. And yeah, you know, I mean, he did the, you know, DC, what do you want to talk about? And there was little hints of maybe him overdoing it or maybe crowds, you know, I don't know, maybe we're reading too much into it or some callers were, but you know, is that going to wear out its welcome? But I think they've been doing a really good job with him as a top star who isn't a champion, you know, a singles champion. I think they've done a good job managing the story arc that, you know, presumably will culminate once again at WrestleMania next year. Nate, how are you feeling about Cody?
So I like the direction they're going with Cody right now. I mean, I'm not the biggest Cody fan in the world. Like I kind of do find him a little corny and cheesy sometimes. And, you know, the whole, so what do you want to talk about thing, I think is, I don't know, like it was cool the first couple times he said it. And now I cringe every time I hear it, but, you know, but he's clearly a star. He's very clearly a star. I think, you know, last year leading up to WrestleMania, you know, the story that they were telling with him, you know, winning the title or trying to win the title and, you know, do the thing that, you know, his dad and brother for that matter didn't, you know, were never able to do and win the big one. Yeah, I think that was the right direction for it. You know, I was a proponent of Cody, you know, ending the reign of Roman Reigns. But, you know, now I think it makes more sense the direction that they went. You know, I don't know if we're necessarily going to see him, you know, challenging for a title at WrestleMania or not. But it, when he does, like, I think it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal moment for, you know, first off. But, but you know, the direction that they're going with him right now, you know, with Jay and everything, it's entertaining. And, yeah, I think it kind of fits, you know, fits where he is. Like, you know, with Seth as the main champion right now, I think that kind of works. I think it definitely works.
Well, AJ, let me shift to. Oh,
I'm
no, sorry. Jump in. Go ahead and respond. Sorry about that. Yep. No, you go.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think I agree with what Nate is saying here as well. And I think Cody has played his position really well when it comes to sharing the stage with Sammy or sharing the stage with Jay, because he was sort of the newest kid in the block, right, in terms of who's going to take the throne from Roman. And I think he's been really good about making sure anytime he's sharing stage with Jay or Sammy, he's not taking anything away from them. In fact, he's propping them up more than himself. And he's a smart guy. I don't think he's, you know, just an overly friendly natured guy. I think he's really smart to the business, and he knows what's going to turn people off, and he knows exactly what's going to turn people on. And I think he's playing his role brilliantly in terms of being seen as the top star, and the fans are certainly behind him as well.
And some lessons learned from AEW, probably, you know, and what
Absolutely.
Went wrong there. Obviously,
yeah.
He's in different circumstances yeah. and arguably better hands when it comes to the type of character he plays, with, you know, WWE's, you know, framing of him and guidance and curating of good and minimizing the bad. Yeah, well, let's shift to other aspects of the show here. After Cody, was there a sense of who the second biggest star was, or was it a cluster of people just kind of all in a distant number two?
So Seth would be number two, and number three would be a tie between Sammy and Jay. I think those two are very much at the same level. I'm really happy to see Sammy maintain his footing, if you will, right? Without a Kevin Owens, without the bloodline, I think Sammy's passion, I think, really speaks to the fan base. So I think he's doing well. I think with Jay, you're seeing his character slowly coming out, right? Now everyone can tell apart who's Jay and which one's Jimmy. I love his Yeet shirt. A lot of kids were wearing it. And that was probably one of the most common chants I heard today, more so than the Ric Flair. Woo! So it was really
wow.
cool that people are really connecting with that. So, yeah, I would say Seth number two, and then a tie between Sammy and Jay for the third position.
Nate,
and
you
then
want to jump
a
into
distant,
the
a very distant, sorry, Wade,
yeah.
other contender who I know the fans were really trying to get behind, which was nice to see, was The Miz. And I know they're trying to prop him up to,
yeah.
you know, be a strong contender against Gunther. I thought the match didn't really make him look good at all. It, in fact, made him look the same. And he does have a lot of momentum behind him coming from last week and even this week. The crowd was really trying to get behind him, but I think at some point you also have to show your strength, and you can't just continue to weasel your way out of every match, right? So I think that was a little bit disappointing
yeah.
because the fans really wanted to jump in with him, but I think they weren't compelled enough through his performance.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Nate, how about you? Do you have anything you want to ask it?
Yeah. So kind of on the lines of reactions, you know, one of the things that we were just talking about with the last caller, Brad, was Becky's reaction, and it seemed like, you know, her reaction was a little bit, I guess, more muted on TV than I was expecting when she came out. Is that kind of how it came across in the building? And did it seem like she kind of maybe has lost a little bit of the luster that she's had over the last handful of months?
Yeah, good question. So she definitely got a pretty decent pop when she came out, which is what you would expect. It didn't come across to me that it was muted, but I think with Becky, though, the last 6 months, her character has been making what I'll call special appearances, right? She hasn't really had a storyline that's resonating with the fans, a long arc, if you will. So I think when folks see her, it's a pleasant surprise, but they know they're probably not going to see her for the next 3 weeks now, right? So I think they're probably channeling their energy a little bit more towards folks who are a little bit more consistent and have some, you know, stronger storylines associated with it. So I wonder if that's probably the drop that you noticed.
And it could certainly be. No, thank you.
Anything else, Nate? You want to jump in?
Offhand, I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, no problem. How was the booing of Dom, AJ?
Oh, man. You know, the booing of Dom is one of my favorite things of the show. And here's the funny thing, and I think I mentioned this in one of my previous calls to you as well. So I was at SummerSlam, and people wait for Dom to just make an appearance. They just want to see him so bad, and fans are generally really excited to see Dom more than anyone else. So in the Judgment Day, it's Dom and Mommy are perhaps the two most favorite characters that fans have, right? So any glimpse they get of either of those two, they just go crazy, right? And I think the boos for Dom is really more of an appreciation for his character. So people are generally very fond of him, but now it's become the cool thing just to boo him, right? So, and I think he plays his part really well. He's a very consistent performer in that sense, and the fans are very consistent in booing him, and it's genuinely very loud. No one's adding any noise to it. What you hear is the loudest boo that Dom gets, and there's not a close second. So I think that's pretty impressive. I'm sure Ray is proud. Ray is very, very proud.
Yes, I suspect he is. What was the low point of the show where maybe they lost the crowd or you got bored or anything like that?
Dewdrop. What's her new name? Piper Nevin?
Piper Nevin, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, Piper Nevin, yeah. Almost no reaction to her. Most of the segments with the women, with the exception of Becky Lynch, I think is where the crowd was just not engaged, not interested at all. I'm trying to think. The one woman they are obsessed with, which you could probably tell, is Mommy, Rhea Ripley. I thought she gave a great promo. I mean, I would actually say Cody number one and Rhea Ripley number two, and then I would put Seth Rollins, honestly.
It is a challenge to have her part of the heel group playing off of, you know, Zoe Stark, who's presumably trying to be a babyface. And I mean, yeah, I mean, fans look for opportunities to cheer. When she says Mommy's always on top and she can handle everything on her plate, some fans cheered during the segment with Stark. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting, but I mean the way she's acting and ranting and raving and who she's aligning with. I mean, she's clear. They're not hedging. They're portraying her as a heel completely in defiance of how much the fans want to cheer her.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, speaking of which, I don't know if you picked this up on TV or not, but throughout the entire show, the most common chant was "We want Mommy" throughout the show. And especially when Judgment Day was present, so in the main event, even when Rhea Ripley's not there, that's the most common chant. Even in the earlier segment when she wasn't present, when it was just the guys on the stage, that was the most common chant. So I don't know if they picked that up on the TV or not, but I thought that was pretty cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything, did anything happen before Raw went on the air or after Raw went off the air?
So what's the last thing you guys saw in Raw? Because there was a little bit, a bit of a segment that was stretched. What's the last thing you saw, Wade, on the show?
Yeah, the last thing was Ripley just offering a handshake to Drew and Drew shaking her hand.
Okay. All right. So that's when the show technically ended, and then with Cody and Jay still in the ring, Cody grabbed the mic, which I expected him to, as most would, and he thanked the crowd for coming, for bringing the energy, and he told the crowd to give, you know, a huge ovation to main event Jey Uso, which, again, was a really smart touch, right? So that was cool. And then they did this really cool thing where Cody gets the crowd pumped, hands the mic to Jey, and I haven't seen Raw for the last few weeks, so I don't know if this is a thing the two of them have, but Cody's getting the crowd pumped up to the point where Jey gets the mic and he says "Yeet," his new line, and all the fans, everyone just goes crazy. So it's very similar to, like, "Are you ready?" the whole DX thing. So I think the two of them have sort of found something that the fans really get behind. So that was really cool. So they were kind of playing with the fans because Jey wasn't saying it, and the crowd kept saying "Yeet, yeet, yeet." And he eventually said it, and everyone went crazy. So that's the last thing on the show. And Cody, of course, thanked all the fans for coming. And at the top of the show, it was Apollo Crews. He faced someone named Tovian. I haven't seen that wrestler before, but Apollo Crews got, really nice pop, beginning of the show. A lot of people are generally pretty excited. One of my buddies brought his 8-year-old son to the show, and it was so funny seeing him there. It was his first live show, so it was pretty exciting for him to be there. And this poor kid exhausted all of his energy on the first half hour of the main event with Apollo Crews. So after 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, he almost
that's
had
hilarious.
No
oh,
energy
no.
left in him.
Oh my god! Oh,
yeah,
that's funny.
He slept through the main event, which was just so funny. But it was really cool seeing him get so excited and get behind Apollo Crews. So that was really funny.
I love it.
That's great.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, yeah.
AJ, anything else you want to share on the show?
The only other thing that surprised me is the merchandise stand. I checked out 3 different merchandise stands, and a lot of John Cena, Cody Rhodes, and what was the third? The third was DC 316. Those were the 3 most prominent shirts. I was surprised there was no LA Knight shirts because he's a top seller from what I hear.
Yeah.
And I hope they're not sharing his merchandise because he's on SmackDown. That would be a big miss. So I thought that was a surprise, but that's the last thing I could think of that just sort of made me raise an eyebrow.
All right. Well, AJ, unless there's anything else you want to share, we can let you go.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for taking my call, Wade.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nate.
Yeah, great hearing from you. Thanks, AJ. Appreciate it.
You too. All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
If you'd like to be our on-site correspondent on a future episode, you can email me at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com, and let me know what show you're going to, put the date, ideally in the city and the subject line. It helps me stay organized. And, we'll arrange to have you on. And AJ did a great job, so you kind of know what we're looking for. All right, let's go to area code 610 next. 610, thanks for calling. Go ahead, state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, how you doing, guys? This is John, right outside of Philadelphia. First-time caller. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Great. Good to hear from you, John.
Thank you. Thanks, Wade. Appreciate it. I just wanted to kind of poke a couple holes in the Damian Priest. There was an earlier caller, I think it was Brad from Florida, who's a great caller, but I just wanted to poke a couple holes in the turning, you know, babyface. I don't see it. I don't get it. I don't see where it makes much sense. If you look at your two current title holders, you have Seth, who is just super over. You turn Damian babyface. He's not going to face Seth. I mean, I know Seth can kind of go both ways, but right now he's just so over. And then you look at SmackDown, and there's just no way he's going to face Roman. I mean, he's just not big enough. And I don't mean size-wise, I just mean over-wise. They really just don't fit. And then you got to take him out of the Rumble at this point because he already holds the Money in the Bank. So I'm just really confused with what they're doing with Damian Priest. I just don't see – I mean, I'm not dismissing it, but yeah. I just don't see you know, what they're doing with this Money in the Bank with him. I mean, I loved it when he got it. I love Damian Priest. I think he's paid his dues for years and years and years. He's a great worker. But, you know, they gave him this Money in the Bank, and I just don't see what they're doing with it. And maybe I'm missing something. But I just don't see what they're going to do with the guy for the next couple of months. And I was just curious if you guys had any thoughts on that, maybe alternatives.
I think a weak way to turn babyface is to have the heels you're hanging out with reject you. You know, the go-to example, Seth Rollins with the Authority. But I could imagine McDonough screwing up Priest's cash-in. And, you know, we kind of have the Escobar brass knuckles on the ring apron where it's like, did he mean to do it? It seemed rather reckless or careless, but there's plausibly deniability there. There's a way to tell that story, but I think it's important before that happens, if that is what they do. And it's possibly just cashes in honorably and as a babyface down the line and wins a world title in a match he announced ahead of time. I mean, there's various options. And I think a pretty wide array of possibilities based on history and just the way wrestling tells stories. But the idea of him being on the verge of cashing in, but JD costs him, or, you know, possibly Drew, if they go down the road of Drew aligning with or even joining Judgment Day, which feels, you know, weird. I mean, and that's why when I asked earlier, you know, what do I see? It's like, I can imagine different things, but I'm not in love with any of the ideas in my head about where they're going. But the idea of McDonough and Priest, because of how much they've played up that dynamic, I think they can build up to that moment over weeks, months, to where something happens that then triggers Priest deciding to leave the group because he's had enough of them backing JD. John, what do you think of that? And then I'll throw to Nate for any thoughts he has.
No, I see the point. I do. I guess for me, it's timeline, right? So it's, you know, you're butting up against Survivor Series is already going to be involved in War Games. What's the pay-per-view after Survivor Series between now and Rumble? Is there one? So now you're getting to Rumble. You know, I don't know if he's going to be lined up for a title defense there. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there like a – is there a time limit on the Money in the Bank still?
I think it's 1 year.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a one-year clock.
That was,
yeah.
Okay, so we're looking at still early summer. Okay, so you're going to get through Rumble. You're going to get through Mania.
Yeah, they can't wait till after Mania.
Right. The JD McDonough thing. Now, I love JD McDonough. Don't get me wrong. I love him as a performer. I think he's got great facial expressions, really safe worker, good worker, solid. But is he big enough from a stature standpoint, from a persona standpoint, to really be the catalyst for a money in the bank, not cash in, but a storyline involvement to get Priest on that track? I'm not saying no, just kind of devil's advocate. And I get that the end game here is to get Priest out of the bloodline. And I guess at that point, Priest plays that lone wolf character. So I don't know. I guess I'm confused. I guess I'm searching for answers. And I want it to work. I really do. I love Damian Priest. I think it's his time. But I guess I'm just not seeing the path.
I mean, that can be a good or bad thing. You know what I mean? You're going to be pleasantly surprised that they went somewhere you didn't see coming. It wasn't just obvious. Or the downside, whatever they do will not be satisfying, because even maybe they're struggling with how to tell the story. They feel they painted themselves into a bit of a corner or a conundrum in terms of how they portrayed the dynamic with Priest and everybody else. Nate, jump in with your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier tonight, but I mean, you know, Damian Priest, he's certainly somebody that I think could hold his own as, you know, as a main event level, like, you know, babyface or heel for that matter. They've definitely shown, you know, again, as we said tonight, you know, they've shown that, you know, they've kind of given some foreshadowing of some babyface stuff in the past with Damian Priest. But yeah, like they're really isn't like necessarily, at least for me either, like a clear path to that babyface, you know, spot. I think the most sense is kind of like what Wade outlined, you know, JD McDonough, you know, kind of costing him the cash in and then, you know, something along those lines, you know, he kind of chooses to leave the group or something like that. You know, after a failed cash in or even just after the group, maybe it's even, you know, months after a failed cash in and, you know, he's just sick of the group backing JD or something along those lines. I think it's in the cards for Damian Priest, but yeah, it just kind of a matter of how to get there right now. That's kind of the big question. Cause it's like, mm-hmm. You know, Damian versus Seth, it could certainly work, but they'd have to, you wouldn't be able to really turn Damian against Seth. I feel like fans are going to be behind him, and I don't feel like Damian is a credible threat for Roman right now. So,
yeah,
he's kind of in this weird limbo where I feel like he's going to hold on to that briefcase until Seth loses the title, Roman loses the title, or he cashes it in anyway, and it's going to be a failed cash-in. So that's kind of like where I see Damian Priest going, at least in the interim. And I did look up the pay-per-view card, and it doesn't look like we actually have any pay-per-view between Survivor Series and Rumble. According to Wikipedia, there's only one NXT event deadline in December. But other than that, it doesn't look like there's another December pay-per-view or PLE.
Right. John, back to you.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to comment on is just the dichotomy between the women's division on Raw, SmackDown. It is, to me, it's startling. I mean, you have SmackDown that has a lot of great stars, Bianca, Io, Charlotte, so on and so forth. I mean, you could keep naming them, and I think it's pretty obvious they're setting up the women's War Games over on SmackDown, but then you look at Raw, and it's just like Rhea and who? I do like Zoe Stark. I really do. But her mic skills need a lot of work. And for that matter, they've run through so many people to challenge Rhea, between, you know, currently Zoe. And, I mean, you had Zelina Vega at one point, that Raquel a couple times, they flirted with Nia. I mean, do you pull the trigger? And I get that it's the Fox show, SmackDown, but Jade Cargill with Rhea, just to give somebody credible to get through. I mean, obviously you're going to miss Survivor Series with her, but Rumble into Mania, and you pull the Jade Cargill wild card there just to build up some sort of credibility on Raw with that women's division. What do you guys think?
Nate, I'll throw to you first on that, including the missing Jade Cargill suddenly.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because like Jade hasn't even been on my mind. She was all over the place. She's on every single show, and then she disappeared. And I'm like, I hadn't even really thought about her. I could see them doing something like that with Jade Cargill and Rhea. Because I feel like, you know, I feel you're right. I mean, you know, SmackDown does have kind of a much more robust women's division. I mean, heck, I mean, just look at Damage Control. It's just right there. You've got some excellent talent just in that faction. Raw, I mean, you know, yeah, Zoe Stark and you know, Shayna Baszler and there's a few others. Yeah, I think that kind of makes a lot of sense. Like, at least to me right now, anyway, you know, Jade, because they've teased her, you know, on NXT quite a bit, but I can't necessarily see her in all of her hype showing up on and being part of NXT long term, if at all. Yeah, I think that was kind of more of a red herring than anything. The main roster is where I feel like she's going to wind up landing, and you know, Ross seems to kind of be the best fit. Yeah, I don't remember if there was another part of that question, but I think I hit it.
Yeah, John, back to you. Anything you want to follow up on there?
Yeah, DIY's theme music sucks. Please.
Yes, it does.
It's just the freaking, just the worst. Just so bad. And it's like, who doesn't love
Crimson
Gargano?
Hearts is great.
Right, I know. And it's, and somebody brought it up earlier. It was like, just, there are certain theme songs that just get you hype, whether the wrestler is good or not. And like Sami Zayn's theme music gets people hype, and Cody Rhodes' music gets people hype. And for years, Gargano's theme music, I feel like, got everybody hype. And then by extension, it was Ciampa. And you took that away from them. And this was like the big, not reveal, but the big comeback for DIY. And you kind of chopped them at the knees because they were mid-card anyway, coming back. And then you took like the one thing that really could have equalized them to fans. And you took the theme music away. So nitpicky, but if you're talking marketing and things like that, you kind of took it away from them. But I'll turn it back to you guys. I appreciate the time with y'all. Appreciate this is my first time calling, and a lot of fun. Thank you,
John. How long have you been listening, and how'd you discover our show?
Man, I've been listening now for let me say this. I've been paying for about 5 months and then listening on Spotify for probably a year before that. So I've been making my way through the archives and every now and then call in, but listen to the call in and finally had enough gumption tonight to finally get my thoughts across.
How'd you find us? Just a search return or someone mentioning on social media or recommendation?
Being a nerd for wrestling for 25 years, and then just making my way through different blogs and different, honestly, the way I heard about you, Wade, was the Bruce Prichard podcast.
Heard the name come up.
Yep. Yeah, heard the name come up, and I'm like, let me go down the rabbit hole, find a couple other folks that I can nerd out with, and ended up here.
Yeah, my name comes up with Bruce and Conrad.
yeah, I know.
And Eric Bischoff.
Yep.
Cool. No, it's fun to hear. Everybody's got a different story in terms of how they found us. So glad we stuck. Thanks for being a VIP member. And please call again.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet, John.
Take care.
All right. One or two other things I want to bring up, and then we could probably wrap up here. Let me think here. Oh, the Creeds hanging out with Alpha Academy and then New Day coming in. I didn't like it. I thought it diminished the Creeds to be hanging out backstage in kind of with like a comedy act. And then New Day coming in for no purpose, just doing their obnoxious skit. And then to just have a camera pan to the side, which in general is sort of kind of a neat thing of, oh, there's something going on over here, and then let's track back here. It feels a little more impromptu and less scripted, even though it's obviously hyper-scripted. I thought it diminished the creeds. It made it seem like, oh, these are just comedy guys too. So, and then Tozawa just makes, you know, there's occasions I'm amused, I will admit, by something Tozawa does, but a lot of the times I just feel sort of like sad watching his attempts at humor or uncomfortable. And boy, do they linger on him a longer time than I think his gyrating like New Day called for. So that just didn't work for me. Low point of the show for me, Nate.
I'd agree. I mean, you know, I am a fan of dumb, stupid humor in wrestling. Like in the absence of R-Truth, I've kind of dug some of the stuff Tozawa's been doing, especially in NXT. He's showing up and stealing Noam Dar's Heritage Cup and things like that. I think it was last week. Last week I think was the match between him and Tozawa. But I was down in Philadelphia in the Philly area, so I actually haven't watched last week's NXT yet. I know, right? I gotta somehow figure out how to fit it in between an all hands work meeting tomorrow, going out for drinks afterwards, and then the actual NXT and PWT Talks NXT. It's gonna be I might have to put it on the car while I'm driving or something.
While you're brushing your teeth tonight and tomorrow, just chip away at it.
Exactly.
I've done that. I've turned something on the phone and it's like 5 minutes here, 12 minutes there. Just work your way through it. Yep.
Yeah, chip through it over the course of the day. Like you said, the Creeds, like I'm glad to see them up on the main roster. You know, and Ivy Nile. I was really worried about Ivy Nile. She's coming along. She's much better in the ring than she used to be. But I don't personally think she's like ready for the main roster yet. But the Creeds are. So I was really surprised to see her. You come up, I think it was last week she was in that match, then again here tonight. I think surprised in a good way. I'm hoping that this is a good thing for her. The Creeds, I understand putting them with Chad Gable because there's been a lot of comparisons between, the Creed brothers and American Alpha, back in the day when Jason Jordan could still wrestle. So, that I guess sort of makes sense, but nothing else does. Like the Creeds aren't a comedic group down in NXT. Diamond Mine was the furthest thing from a comedic group. It was all about, kind of being better and training and being the best faction in NXT, even though that never really panned out, but still, that was really their mission statement. So to see them kind of joking around backstage and, to see, I think it was Julius called Chad Gable boss or something like that. It felt like it diminished the Creeds and they are a really well-polished tag team at this point. I don't really feel like they need to brush elbows with, a comedic team like that. I would much rather see them demolishing the comedic team or something along those lines. So I wasn't really a big fan of the segment either.
I'm not sure what's going on with Ivar and Bronson Reed. Are they, is one going to be a babyface? Are they going to fight it out and turn into partners? Is it just related to trying to replace, get him back in the mix because Rick Shaven's supposed to kick out when he was concussed last week? Like, what's your take on what they're doing there? I haven't thought a lot about it since the segment aired. I just remember going away from it thinking, I don't know. You don't want a lot of segments where fans are ambivalent or going against the grain of what the characters, how the characters are framed and portrayed on TV. But I don't even know with Ivar and Bronson how, you know, I guess it's just the intrigue of seeing them wrestle.
Yeah, it must be because, like, you know, for me tonight, I was kind of taking, you know, getting more like, you know, babyface vibes from Ivar and more like heel vibes from Bronson Reed. But not fully either, you know, so it's kind of like they're almost ambiguous right now with I feel like more Bronson Reed than Ivar. You know, I could certainly see them kind of doing almost like a, you know, Sheamus and Cesaro thing where they fight and then, you know, find some common ground and become a team until, you know, Eric gets back or whatever. What do you know what the prognosis is for Eric? I mean, is he coming back after neck surgery? I don't know.
I don't know definitively either way. There's been no retirement announcement. It's possible.
Okay.
They're going to wait until they get more information. I haven't asked and gotten a specific answer if they're optimistic of him coming back or assuming he'll come back. So I'd be speculating.
Yeah. Okay. No problem. But yeah, I mean, you know, wouldn't surprise me, you know, if they were to kind of put him in a tag team, you know, with Bronson Reed, you know, at least until Eric comes back and kind of the two big guys or something like that. I do like Ivar on his own. You know, I've talked about this a little bit before, you know, when you've had me on in the past, but, you know, I've seen Warbeard Hansen, you know, Ivar before he was Ivar, you know, on the indies quite a bit in this area. He wrestled for our local promotion Chaotic for a bit. So I know he actually has a pretty good single streak in him. You know, I feel like he could be a pretty dominant heel, you know, for WWE. They just don't, that's not really the direction they seem to be going with him in terms of heel. But I think he could certainly be a pretty, you know, a solid singles competitor. I don't think they necessarily need to put him with Bronson Reed, or anybody else for that matter, you know, until Eric gets back. But I think that, probably what they're doing right now is I think right now it's probably just kind of like a match between the two, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's where they wind up.
And then finally for me, the announcers made a big deal out of not knowing who Shinsuke is talking about. What do you think about that storyline? Do you have any theories on how that manifests?
Yeah. So first off, I love it. I love Shinsuke, and I feel like they've been just so hot and cold on Shinsuke over the years. And this kind of incarnation of Shinsuke, kind of starting with the whole Seth Rollins feud and kind of, you know, continuing through tonight. I like it. I like the fact that he's speaking Japanese and not that he can't speak English. I mean, he speaks English relatively well, but I mean, I feel like there's more conviction in what he's saying there. And then give us the subtitles and it's all good. Comes across a little more dark and sinister that way, which is, I think, what they're trying to portray. In terms of who he was talking about, I mean, immediately I'm going back to Seth and him trying to capture the title. And I feel like it's – and I don't remember exactly the way he worded it, but he said something along the lines of, like, you know, he's going to wait. And I took that to mean he's going to wait until Seth Rollins is done doing the whole Survivor Series War Games thing.
Yeah.
And then go back. That makes the most sense to me, but yeah, they were kind of playing that up on commentary. Like, oh, who's he talking about? So I'm not sure if that's kind of like foreshadowing that, they're not talking about Seth Rollins, they're talking about somebody else.
Yeah. But I went through the same thing you did. It sounded like you're talking about Seth again, but then the announcers, you know, it wasn't definitive that's what he was doing, but it is what he said was consistent, I think, with that being who he was talking about. But I just don't see any value in going back to that.
Yeah, no, me either. I mean, they had two matches on pay-per-view, right?
Yeah.
I think it was two. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I mean, I guess Shinsuke could come back and win it or something, but that I'd really want to see. They'd have to tell me a really good story at that point to kind of go back to it. It almost feels like Shinsuke should kind of move on. You know, continue doing this character. I love this character and kind of this, you know, this more dark and kind of sinister type of Shinsuke. But yeah, it almost feels like, I don't know, just too much of a rehash to go right back to Seth after War Games.
Nate, anything else from the show you would like to bring up?
Okay, actually, it's not necessarily from the show, but this is something I read online, and I'm actually just curious to your opinion, because I thought this was an interesting take on the Seth Rollins character, and you know, you are kind of famous for going, who is Seth Rollins back in the day, so I figured why not. But I saw this earlier in the day, and you know, Kevin Nash said something along the lines that he couldn't stand the Seth Rollins character. Until all of a sudden he was watching a couple of months ago and it dawned on him. He's like, this guy's the modern, like this character is like a modern day Macho Man. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been the same way. I haven't been super high on this weird and wacky Seth Rollins. You know, I've loved the outfits, you know, and I've said that before. I've loved the outfits, mm-hmm. kind of see, you know, what he's going to be wearing next, but the crazy laughing and all of that stuff just for me didn't necessarily click, but I read that and I'm like, Macho Man, I don't know. It almost kind of made sense and kind of to me anyway. And tonight I was watching him in a bit of a different light with that kind of that in mind. And it seemed to make sense to me. I wasn't a huge wrestling fan back in the day when Macho Man was still active and all of that. So I was just kind of curious your take on that to kind of close things
up. I think it's the best comparison of somebody who was a prominent, almost top star in WWE, or almost top star, because Randy was a top star, but the top guy. And yeah, I think that's an apt comparison. I mean, Kevin Nash, I mean, not everything he's done is commendable in the business, and not everything he says do I agree with.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I have had many conversations with him, you know, for publication and off air, and there's a lot that I respect about him. And he is super smart, super perceptive. He's got a way with words, and he's a fan of pro wrestling. Like, I mean,
yeah.
He's not just a guy who, he's not just a guy who's like in it for the money. And someone said, you're tall, you should be a wrestler. He's really grown into other things. I mean, I remember telling him, you should see this Samoa Joe guy. And he like watched Samoa Joe match. He's like, oh yeah, this guy's really good. Like that's how far back we go. And I think he, you know, used that as a, you know, that viewing to kind of go, he put in word for Joe after that. So he's the type of person where like, oh, there's this guy you should see and he'll go watch, like that kind of thing. So, sure. You know, he's paying attention, but what's interesting about his perspective is he has no filter. He has a filter. I know that, but he doesn't worry about what people are going to think if he just blurts out his initial impression of something or somebody. And he also will augment it over time. You know, I've watched more of him. Here's what I think. That's what I mean by no filter. Like he really is, transparency is what I'm looking for. He's like, I don't like this guy. You're going to know how it feels, but he is open to changing. He's open to going, hey, I didn't see this or I didn't get it. Or this showed me something different. Or in this case, something clicked with me. I categorized him in a Randy Savage way. If you imagine fans back when Savage was first taking off nationally in the WWF, and people were into him, and he was quirky and odd, but charismatic, but unconventional in his charisma. Some people are going to say it's blasphemy if they love Macho Man and find Seth really annoying.
Right.
But I do think that is an astute and about as accurate of a comparison era to era as comparing Seth to anyone else. I mean, you know, people have dressed outlandishly before. You know, Jesse Ventura tried to, you know, like not shock people, but you know, the bombast and the sunglasses and the boas and the colors. I mean, Seth is drawn from a lot of people. He's a collage of a lot of things. And some people see him as a collage of so many things. He isn't any one thing. He isn't distinct. He isn't doing what Macho Man did, which is, you know, becoming an iconic character who was an original. But you know, you could also on the positive side, just frame it as, Seth is most like Macho Man, but he's different enough that this is what it'd be known for. And it's Seth. I think one of the problems with Seth being seen as Macho Man is people have seen so many other sides of Seth. And nobody saw, I mean, almost nobody saw any other side of Macho Man. You know,
that's very true, yeah.
From the day, you know, I mean, there was no national TV exposure, and even pre-national TV exposure regionally, there's not much where you get an idea of what he was like when he wasn't on and in character. So that takes a little bit, I think that takes the authenticity away from the idea that this is who he really is. But, you know, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, cool. Yeah, it's like I said, I read it earlier today, and it seemed to make a lot of sense to me. But I was a little bit on the younger side when Macho Man was, you know, on he was still active and all that. So yeah, I was curious to see what your perspective was. Appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thank you everybody for listening, for downloading. Spread the word, let people know about this show if you like it. Give us a 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. That does make a difference. And if you enjoy the show, we appreciate you doing that. And join us next time. Jason Paul will be on the flagship tomorrow. So if you've got questions for that show, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Get those questions in quick, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can send questions and comments anytime throughout the week. We'll find a way. I'll read them for sure, and we'll find a way to include most of them in a show where it makes sense, even if I don't get around to it right away. We did have, unfortunately, I realized a bunch of messages going to spam, which it makes no sense why some of them are going to spam. So I am checking that regularly too. So if you were discouraged by your questions being ignored and spam, like, and they delete it automatically after like 14 or 30 days. So I wasn't able to go too far back. Feel free to email again because it wasn't on purpose, except for one of you, and you know who you are. No, I'm kidding. We'll be back.
It was me trying to send you the PWT recordings, wasn't it?
Yes.
My emails weren't getting through to Wade, and I actually found out it was the whole problem with my email setup. But yeah.
So Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com, and then I'll be by on Wednesday night with a live stream after AEW Dynamite. Thanks, Nate. Always great talking wrestling with you.
Yes, you as well. You as well. And I will be on PWT Talks NXT tomorrow night talking NXT. So check that out on the live cast if you'd like to do so. Talk some wrestling with us.
Yeah, there's a different link to that stream. You can find it at the top of the TV report at pwtorch.com. And you guys go live shortly after NXT goes off the air. So, if you haven't listened in yet to that live or participated with calls or emails, information will be at pwtorch.com and the NXT TV report. All right. Thanks, Nate. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Wade. Take care.
Yep. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, our callers, our emailers, and all our listeners. We'll talk to you next time.